You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, football is upon us. We're going to break down that Texas A&M fall football camp that starts at the end of this week as we get geared up for that fall football season. We'll also talk to Fighting Texas Aggie soccer player Emily Bates as they get their season underway here shortly, and all kinds of other fun stuff that we'll get into. But before we can do that, I gotta bring in the guy across the table from me in this lovely lavender polo. This is one of the quality polos in the rotation. That's President Zachary Taylor.
I have a very limited rotation of nice shirts that I can wear to work, and this happens to be one of them. Just be happy that I'm not wearing a t-shirt, because that's what normal people do in the radio business.
I'm a fan of the lavender polo.
And also, we're kind of at this awkward stage where I'll be looking away from you and towards the folks and talking to them.
But
and,
I can see you in my screen right here that's in front of me.
Oh,
so
that's
crazy.
Like,
we have like
okay.
Podcastception going on.
That makes sense. Just a podcast inside of a podcast inside of another podcast.
For those of you that are just listening on the podcast, we are periscoping again for the first time in a long time. So, hi, Periscope Land. How are you?
And of course, you can always check it out later, right?
Yeah, if you want to watch
if you do the Periscope stuff.
If you want
I'm not
see,
very good at this. You are. You're
if you want to see this lovely lavender polo in person, you can do it on Periscope.
It's the shark, by the way, Greg Norman.
There you go.
It's a golf polo.
There you go.
Very nice.
There you go. Hey, my mom says hi.
Hey, Mrs. Brown.
Anyway,
Mama Brown, what's up?
So, you. This has been the year, the summer of the sunburn for you.
It's been pretty bad. You know, 4th of July, our antics out of the pool got pretty burned there. Now, that one was my fault. I will take complete failure on that part. I'll take the brunt of it. I didn't apply sunscreen like I should have, and I understand this. However, this past previous weekend, I went to the river, went and floated the Guadalupe. Went and floated the Guadalupe, of which you were supposed to be making a trek down there with us, but apparently you were too tired. Is that what it was?
I needed my beauty rest.
Yeah, you needed just to take a weekend off from all your blowing and goings and going to Chicago, going to Hoover, going to Omaha. So it's been an eventful summer for you, me not so much. So I wanted to go to the river, and when you go to the river, of course, a lot of things. The last thing on your mind is generally putting on sunscreen, but I made sure to put on ample sunscreen before I hit the tube. And once I was in the tube, I even remembered, because again, most of your body, well, I say most of your body, some of your body is not being exposed to the sun, because you got your back in, you're sitting in your tube for the most part, unless you fall out. And I somehow, some way, despite putting on plenty of sunscreen, still got burned in the middle of my back. And it went from sore to itchy, and now it's peeling again. I'm peeling. Everywhere else I got this beautiful bronze. Look at that. Look
yeah,
at that.
That is
a gorgeous golden brown right there. But everywhere else, at least the middle of my back is very white.
Yeah.
And in other parts that aren't exposed to the sun are very, very white.
Yeah, poor little buddy.
But other than that, we had a really good time, man. You should have come out.
Yeah,
can't believe Steve Fulhart. He previously of KBTX. He's actually the MC for the Bombers this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Does the games and everything else. He's the master of ceremonies down there. He joined us alongside our good buddy Adam Drake.
Yeah,
from over at the Dixie Chicken.
Yeah.
And
it's just a who's who of College
Station. It really
right
was.
There.
I don't mean to name drop, but it was kind of a big deal.
Okay.
And all the ladies on the river thought we were kind of a big deal too. So just to clarify. But no, we did. We had a fun time, and So that's what I did over this past weekend and got burned.
Well, there you go.
And you stayed inside?
Yeah.
Making sure that you didn't reach the sun or anything?
Yeah.
Was it one of those weekends where, you know, you're still busy, you're still out doing things, or is it one of those where you're inside so much that eventually you come out of your cave at 5 o'clock
no,
in the afternoon
I had errands
and the
to run.
Sun hits you and you're
I had errands to run. I had to
like
fix
a vampire.
I had to fix the camera on my phone so that the lovely people out there could see this glorious podcast.
It looks nice.
Because the camera busted on my phone. So there's the lovely $60 for you, Apple.
Jeez.
Enjoy that $60.
Where'd you take it?
The Apple Store.
The Apple Store?
Yeah.
I take mine to Sour Apple. I'm a frequent customer. They've actually given me a discount card for next time I go in, because that's how often I go. Sour Apple, it should be over there on that southwest strip mall that's over by Planet Fitness. My gym of choice. Planet Fitness.
My gym of choice, too.
And I'm trying to think everything else that's over there. I know there's a barber shop. But yeah, Gun Corps used to be over there. And there's also a coffee shop, I think, too. But
Lupa's.
Yeah,
coffee.
But Sour
that's
Apple.
That's where Rockies moved over there.
Yeah, that's right. Rockies is over there now. So
one of my frequent dance halls in College Station.
Really?
I like dancing.
You know, I don't know if I've ever been to Rockies. I don't think I've ever been to Rockies. I've lived here for 8 years, and I don't think I've ever been to Rockies.
I say one of my frequent dance halls. There's two of them, and I go to both of them. So, you know.
What's the other one?
Harry's.
Oh, yeah. I've never gone to Harry's with you either.
Well...
I've never gone to Rockies, and I've never gone to Harry's.
Are you over there trying to dance with me? Or?
Well, you know, if you're out and about, and you know, give me a shout and see, like, hey Zach, what's up?
Hey
How's
Zach, you want to be my dance?
Are you saying our buddy Colin Deaver goes two stepping with you? Is that
he's been once or twice?
Has he really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Harry's is a good time.
The Coloradan is kind of my two stepping Padawan.
The Coloradan. Most of the time, I go there for concerts though.
Yeah.
So they've got some really good concerts.
A hard segue, because I don't really know how to segue into football from Harry's and two-stepping. But football is happening. Football is about to happen. Football is coming.
Yeah, a little bit. Sort of. Kind of.
In College Station, fall football camp starts up at the end of this week, and Texas A&M has plenty of things to look out for and ask about and storylines to follow since SEC media days. And, I mean, I think, of course, and something that we've talked about, but we'll probably just need to get to talked about it again, and it'll probably be something we'll talk about several times throughout the course of this season. And the biggest storyline is, who's going to be the quarterback?
Yeah, that is a humongous question coming in. And, you know, it seems like a repeat every single year. Ever since Johnny Manziel, the Aggies have not had a returning guy. And, you know, most of the time they have not known who was going to be the guy. Trevor Knight, everybody kind of knew he was the guy going into last fall. But the year before that, was it going to be Kyle Allen? Who was it going to be? And the year before that, was it going to be Kyle Allen or Kenny Hill? So the quarterback position has not been stable for the Aggies. And again, here we go. You've got three mostly unproven guys. I would argue that Jake Hubenek, without a doubt, is the most proven, and I mean, people are going to have to agree with me on that one. He's going to be a senior. He's played in some meaningful games. He's gotten some meaningful snaps. But when you look at it overall, at least the talent level, I don't think that Jake is – he's definitely not the future. So a big question is, do you go with who you think is going to be your future and ride the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of that, or do you stick with a guy who's got veteran presence – a smart guy, but probably is not going to wow you with his athletic ability or his play?
Yeah.
It's really tough questions.
I think the guy, and I think it's interesting how split a lot of the media folks and the insider folks seem to be.
We really have no idea.
Subject. I think it's going to be Nick Starkel. I think that
right out of the gate,
I think that from every indication that I've heard from chatting with people, I don't think Kellen Mond is there. I don't think that he has completely developed into the quarterback that they need him to be a starter. And I think there's the ceiling. Jake Hubenek's already reached the ceiling. You know what you're going to get with Jake Hubenek, and that's probably not enough to win the games needed that Kevin Sumlin needs to keep his job. So I think, and the coordinators, you know, you would think too. And so I think that they have to go with what the guy that probably has the highest immediate ceiling, and that's Nick Starkel.
I think Starkel probably has the best arm out of the three. We've talked about that. He has gotten bigger since he's gotten to campus. 1 year off, and he's been able to work out and has gotten stronger and bigger and hopefully faster. You know, I just don't know. Coming in, everybody talks about Kellen Mond and how he is this fantastic talent, even as a true freshman. And you look, you made mention of it too. Kevin Sumlin is going into this year on the hot seat. Okay. Can he afford to play it safe at the quarterback position? Can he afford to have a guy like Jake Hubenek, maybe even a guy like Nick Starkle playing? Or do you say, look, whether this is going to be my last year or not, I've got to go all the way out. I can't play it safe. I can't play it reserved. I have to go out there with who I think is the biggest talent. Do you think, okay.
I don't know if I agree. I mean, granted, I know we're all kind of taking shots in the dark here because we haven't actually really seen these guys go, but.
We saw them in the Friday night light scrimmage and none of them looked good.
No, but I think that Nick Starkle had the best performance in Friday night lights and in the spring game. I kind of beg to differ that right now. I'm not saying that Nick Starkle is when all is all said and done and these guys go through the their however many years at A&M that Nick Starkle is going to end up the best talent of the group.
Being
but
the
I think
guy.
Right now he is the best talent. And I think that he is a guy that's been in the system. I mean, Kevin Sumlin has made mention to it multiple times about how when Trevor Knight went down last year, they strongly considered going with Starkle over Hubenek last year, but they just didn't want to burn the red shirt. And he approached them and said, hey, if I'll burn my red shirt if you need me to go. And they were thinking, well, maybe we'll do this. And they said they decided rather to go with Jake Hubenek instead. And I think that that's a little bit telling as well.
You know, I really just don't know. And we talked about this. We're kind of in the dark on this part. And I think a lot of it, too, how well did they progress over the summer, whether it be in the weight room, whether it be studying film, things like that. You know, when you look over it, Nick Starkle might be the best bet. I have a sneaky suspicion that Sumlin is going to, one, I don't think he's going to use just one quarterback. I think he's going to be bringing in Mond and run type situations or changing things up. I think the UCLA game, I think we'll see at least two quarterbacks in there.
Yeah.
But I just
really?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Look at it a couple of years ago with Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen.
Yeah.
You had Kyler Murray as a true freshman. Of course, someone might have promised Kevin something, his dad something, that, hey, he's going to play. Or, you know, we don't know exactly what went on in that line of thinking, but I can see there being two quarterbacks playing against UCLA. I just have a sneaky suspicion that someone's gonna go with Hubenek. I think the veteran part of it, the veteran aspect of it, I think that he feels more comfortable. And again, Jake is not going to be a guy who's going to lose you a lot of games, but he's not going to win you a lot of games either. And that's great to have in a quarterback if you're, say, Alabama, because you have enough playmakers around him, you don't have to worry about it. But with A&M, obviously they're not Bama. They do have some solid playmakers, but do they have enough to go ahead and win you games? And I think when you talk about that too, you have to look at the running back situation and say, well, the strongest part of this offense is probably going to be the running game.
Right.
Because you got Travion Williams, and you got Keith Ford, two guys that I think are going to have really good years.
We started out looking at this at kind of the micro level of let's break down the little position groups and storylines. I think after starting that, let's reassess this situation. Because I think for the most part, when most, especially fans, but even media a little bit, when they go into and enter a new season, usually the thought process is, okay, fresh slate, new start. Let's see where this goes. I'm pumped. Let's get this thing going. I don't think that's the case for this A&M team this year. I think the bar is set very, 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 very low, and they have to prove something.
Well, and that's not really different ever since Johnny Manziel left. That hasn't been a different start to the season. I mean, last season.
I didn't get that feel last season because I feel like.
You thought the bar was set high last season?
Well, not like, you know, going to make it to the college football playoff high, but I think that there was some excited expectation with the thought of having Trevor Knight in here, a guy who has some skins on the wall, and I thought that there was a little bit of tempered excitement.
Well, that might have been part of it just with Trevor coming in, but that might have been about the only part of it.
I mean, you had Christian Kirk coming back after the year he had. You had a defensive secondary that was really solid. You had Miles Garrett and what he was going to do in his last season. I think the bar was set high for excitement. Maybe not expectation, but excitement. I think this year you enter fall camp kind of meh. And like, you got to show me something to actually catch my interest from a fan's perspective, I would venture to guess.
Well, you talk about there were plenty of storylines before last season, as you said, maybe not expectations, so to speak, because I think a lot of people, even Aggies, had them picked to win about 7 games. And I think that there's probably quite a few that had them picked to win 7 or 6 this year. There are plenty of storylines this season, too. And I think what doesn't get talked about, obviously, we'll talk about the quarterback position. That's going to be a big one. But also, linebacker play. John Chavis is now entering his 3rd season as a defensive coordinator. He's had time. I know that he's not particularly involved in the recruiting process as far as going to recruits' homes, but he knows what these guys look like. He's tried to mold his defense into what he thinks would be a good SEC defense. And I know that there was a video the other day of Tyrell Dotson squatting how much? A lot.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. 600 pounds, I think, something like that. So he has been able to mold his guys. He's got some veteran players now on the defensive side of the ball. That's another storyline to me. I think that this defense will be even more improved than it was last year, and the Aggies better hope that it is, because if they face Darius Geis down in Baton Rouge and he does what he did last season, or they face Bo Scarborough, they're going to be in some big-time trouble. So that's another storyline. I think there are plenty to captivate and to kind of get the imagination of Aggie fans coming into this season. And there's a lot of wild cards too. Like we said, we have not seen Nick Starkle play. We haven't seen Kellen Mond play. We haven't seen Jamon Osborne play, other than of course in practice. We haven't seen defensively a lot of these guys play. So there are plenty of questions. And coming into this, that's kind of what we were admitting too. We don't know a lot of this stuff because we haven't seen these guys play except in practice. There's a lot of wild cards on this team. Mm-hmm. It could go one way or another. That's my viewpoint of it. I think there are plenty of interesting storylines for the team, but I would say that the expectations are about the way they were last year, if not lower. I wouldn't say that they're as low maybe as you think they are, but they're not up there. They're not good. It's not like Johnny Manziel's coming back in his second year.
I mean, yes, but also, what is there to be excited about?
You possibly are going to be seeing a high-end recruit at quarterback.
I just don't see any chance that Kellen Mond starts.
Okay, and that's fine.
So, yeah.
I mean, you can say that. I don't know why on earth you would go out and get a big-time recruit, why you would leave a guy like Jarrett Stidham off the table if, in fact, he did want to come to Texas A&M, which is a lot of the reports that you had. And frankly, I think that was a bad move by Kevin Sumlin and company, that they didn't throw all their weight behind Jarrett Stidham. And if Kellen Mond decided he wanted to go somewhere else, that's fine. But bringing in another veteran quarterback who's had play and a very talented guy. But, I mean, you've got Kellen Mond, you've got Jamon Osborne, another big-time recruit coming in.
And just to cut you off real quick, I think on Periscope, we had a question. Who will make which freshman will make the biggest impact? And I think you said it right there, Jamon Osborne.
Marichal, is that how you pronounce his last name?
I don't
know. Marchial, outside linebacker, also from IMG Academy. I don't think that he will make as big of an impact as Jamon Osborne will, because I think Osborne, as soon as he steps foot on campus, is probably the number 2 guy in the wide receiving corps.
Sure, sure.
Not probably.
You also have Anthony Hines there at
yeah, you've
at
got Anthony Hines. That's what I'm saying.
And
defensively,
a guy that we didn't get to see very much of in the spring because he got hurt.
Defensively, I think this is the best the Aggies have been at linebacker since John Chavis got here, without a doubt. So I'm
on paper because it's going to be young. It's going to be a very young and on paper with if you count the number of starsies they have from things, yeah, it should be good. But that doesn't necessarily, I think the excitement is so tempered is because there's literally not, other than Christian Kirk and Travion Williams and Armani Watts, everything that there is to look forward to is potential and stuff on paper.
Well, that's how it is pretty much every year when you go in, unless you have, of course, a lot of proven guys, but what you're saying is there's a lot of turnover. So there is excitement to see if these guys will be good or bad.
But
I think people are anticipating what they might see on the field.
Right, but part of that is seeing what is on the field and then trying to kind of run down the list of games and see how many games you think that talent can win. And I don't think there's that many games to be won with what you when you actually match up and look and compare what's on paper for A&M and what's on paper from other places.
Well, the Aggies have not gone into a season with title hopes since Johnny's second year. The beginning of that year was whenever all the hype was around. You've got a returning Heisman Trophy winner. You have a lot of talented guys off a team that went 11-2 and smoked Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl. There was a lot of excitement. There were a lot of high expectations for that year. You haven't had a high expectations since then. And, you know, you might say that there's a win or two difference between the expectations of last season and this season, but I don't think any of the Aggies have gone in unless, you know, they're completely just filled with the maroon Kool-Aid. I don't think that there's a lot of people coming in to the last three seasons saying, oh, yeah, we're gonna shock the world. We're going to win 12 games and go to a New Year's Day bowl. Yeah. They haven't made that assumption or haven't come to that conclusion until after the first five games, in which you look and say, holy crap, we're 5-0. We got a real shot at this, and then everything tanks in the month of November, late October and November. So there are plenty of talking points. There are plenty of things to maybe not get excited about, but to look forward to. You know, you also have to wonder, can Kevin Sumlin save his job? You know, that's been talked about a ton, and I think that that's something that people want to go ahead and say, look, we'll give him another year. He's here for another season. Let's see how he does. So, you know, will he be here the same time next year? That's an anticipatory. The young players that you've got, these highly recruited guys, how are they going to play? That's something to anticipate. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily the wins and losses. I think it's more folks are excited to see what is next, whether and not necessarily wins, but just performance on the field. How well can these guys adapt to the college game? Can Kevin Sumlin keep his job? Who's going to be the quarterback? Things like that. That makes sense.
It'll be interesting to see. Well, also starting up around this time is Texas A&M soccer. Next, we will talk to Emily Bates as they kick off the season on the My Aggie Nation podcast. Hey, this is Travis Brown with the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm here with Emily Bates of the Fightin' Texas Aggie soccer team. Emily, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so season's gearing up here pretty quick. We're out here actually at Picture Day. It seems like Picture Day is kind of fun. There's lots of selfies going on. There's lots of group pictures. What's Picture Day like?
It's kind of the calm before the storm, honestly. Like, having practice at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, everyone's getting ready, and this is the fun part of it before the hard work begins.
Is this like the first time that everyone's in like all the gear and all the uniform and kind of get to see the whole team like that?
Yeah, we just got our gear for this whole season actually about an hour ago, and then this is the first time we get to put on our uniforms and our new cleats. And I mean, we haven't worn these for a few months, so it's kind of really, it's a lot of fun to put them back on.
There's a lot of different styles of cleats out here, a lot of different colors. Is it a custom thing? Do you get to pick the color? What's up with the cleats?
You know, they offer us a few different ones to pick from, and they usually are pretty colorful. So just kind of a, you can wear ones from last year, you can wear some of the new ones, or if you want to wear your own Adidas ones, you can. But yeah, it's just kind of whatever feels good, I guess.
The ones you're sporting, they're pretty tame compared to some out there. What's, are you a little bit more incognito cleat wear?
I just wear whatever's comfortable. Fair enough. These are the winners for the past year.
Fair enough.
I like to wear them as long as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had, so those are the ones from last year too? Mm-hmm. You had 5 goals and an assist with at least those cleats, at least part of the season, you would think. What? Tell me a little bit about last season, how that kind of wound up for y'all, and where that left y'all in this offseason.
It was definitely not the season we wanted, but I think it showed us, we definitely saw what we were capable of at some points, and for us to fight back at the end like we did and make it into the NCAA tournament and put up a good fight against USC, like, I think it shows us where we can be and what we're striving for next season.
Definitely. Well, what are some of the key things that y'all are thinking or focusing in on here as the season, this next season starts up?
We have a lot of new faces, but we also have almost our whole team returning, so I think that's really good. And just, I mean, Allie Watt coming back is going to help us a lot, and just the team chemistry we were able to build over the spring really helped us, as we only added 2 people from the spring to now. Mm-hmm. So that is really huge, being able to work with everybody in the spring and kind of build a team chemistry.
Thing to notice, if you just kind of at a glance look at the team and what was going on, probably a little more emphasis on road wins this year as compared to the last 2 seasons. What is that kind of conversation been like, or how do y'all kind of work to write that a little bit this year, because it seemed like that might have been a little bit of a weakness from the last 2 seasons?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a struggle being on the road, not being able to sleep in your own bed and play on a beautiful field like this. Like, every other field is kind of worse than this, so it's they just do such a good job here. But hopefully we can turn that around this year. Like, we just have to take every game the same, whether it's here or on the road somewhere.
Definitely. Okay, so a little bit of an inside look on the team. Like, who's the jokester? Who's the one that's always making everybody laugh?
Honestly, the biggest jokester is Phil. He likes to prank us. But on the team, I'd say either Kate or Sienna, or Jenna's kind of the silent assassin.
Yeah, silent
jokes.
Assassin, yeah.
You don't know she's coming, but she's funny.
That you can actually disclose on a podcast, what's the best prank in your time here? What's really gotten everyone going?
We really don't prank each other that much, but the staff kind of has some jokes going on, and the athletic trainer, Andy Tate, will prank us too. One time someone left their keys in the cold tub room, and she tied it with some tape and taped it to the bottom of the cold tub and told us to go fish for it.
Quality. So, what kind of, how would you describe the style of this team, the style of play, for maybe those who haven't been out to see a game? A little more defensive, a little more up tempo. What can Aggie fans expect from this team this year?
We have a very fast team. I think you can expect us to press a lot and to win the ball up high and then take that and score. And I mean, we have a very fast team with some very fast people, but we also have a very strong midfield that likes to play and connect passes. So I think we can counterattack or play through the middle and make it work.
Definitely. And starting out the regular season out on the West Coast, that's got to be a little exciting. Get a little California in before the winter hits here. What's to look forward to that, and not only just the play, but getting to spend a little time out in the West Coast?
I mean, obviously San Diego's beautiful, and we're excited to go out there. But those are 2 quality opponents that I think will show us where we are at the beginning of the season. It's a good test early on. So we're excited to go out there, have some fun, and win some games.
Mm-hmm. What is, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, breaking in new goaltenders as well, mm-hmm. starting goaltenders. Mm-hmm. How important is that, and what have you seen from those that might step in?
Cozy got to play the whole spring as Liv was still recovering from a surgery. So Cozy did amazing, and Liv's done really well in the practices she's been able to play in. So I think they're going to definitely make each other better, and we'll be lucky to have either one of them behind our defense.
Definitely. Well, I think that is all I need, because you need to get over there and get some headshots done. So thanks so much for joining us, and have a good rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
All right, that is Emily Bates with the Fightin' Texas Aggies soccer team. We'll keep things rolling here on the My Aggie Nation podcast next.
The My Aggie Nation podcast keeps rolling along. Zach Taylor and Travis Brown hanging out with you today. Just got done visiting with Aggie soccer player Emily Bates. Soccer team gearing up for another big year. G. Guerrero's only been here for like 50 years or something like that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
He's been here for quite some time and won quite a few games. And so he's actually been here ever since the start of the program, which he helped start, I believe, 93 is the year, the first year that they started, or 94.
Also starting up A&M volleyball. Maybe we'll have to hit the volleyball circuit.
Yeah, we could do that too. And Coach Lori Corbelli, another coach who has been here since I believe the early 90s. I can't remember which one has been here longer. I think they've both been here about the same time. One might be have gotten hired like 6 months or something before the other one did. But Lori Corbelli and G. Guerrieri both have been here for a long time, and for good reason, because they got winning programs. Let's talk a little bit about this. So on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, they actually tweeted this out yesterday afternoon. I didn't see it until today. I didn't catch, I caught a little bit of Paul yesterday, but not much. Apparently, an anonymous SEC coach had spoken with, I don't know if it was somebody at Feinbaum or just somebody that around the SEC, but an anonymous coach says this about Kyle Field. "I didn't feel like it was hard to play there for our guys at all. For all the stuff you heard about it being crazy and wild, it really wasn't one of the more intimidating atmospheres in the league." And it stinks because this person, actually this was to Athlon Sports. It stinks that the person was anonymous because then the Aggies could really zone in and figure out who they wanted to boo. Well, not boo. Aggies don't boo. We hiss. Aggies hiss. Give them the old horse laugh. Just hiss, because that's real intimidating. But that being said, somebody apparently in the SEC thinks that Kyle Field ain't all that in a bag of potato chips.
You know, Hugh Freeze has a lot of time on his hands.
Yeah, maybe it's you. Well, they didn't say former SEC coach. They said current, I think. But that being said, I, of course, went to school here, graduated in 2012. I was at Kyle for the 2010 game against Nebraska. I was there for the last game against Texas. I was there when DeMarco Murray was stuffed, I think, three or four times at the goal line against Oklahoma. Von Miller just ate him for lunch in 2010. Those were some really loud games, and I was in the student section up on the third deck. But I have heard from other people as well, not just those specifically with the Aggie football program, but just people around town, say they have not heard it that loud since then. Since 2010, 2011, that was the loudest that they've heard it, and have not heard it at that point since then. You know, it's hard for me to tell because I'm up in the press box pretty much the entire time. I go down on the field towards the end of the game, but for the most part, I'm hanging out, so it does muffle the sound a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I've gotten that same feeling as well. And now that you have this vast stadium, you know, I can't remember the last time I didn't see empty seats at Kyle. Not saying that more people automatically makes it louder, because if what I was just saying earlier is the case, you know, there were fewer people, but apparently it was a louder and more intimidating atmosphere. But that being said, you know, It really has seemed the past couple of seasons that there just hasn't been that same kind of aura about it.
Well, I don't have that same depth of reference that you do, but I have reference in looking at other stadiums around the country, and I'd have to agree a little bit with the statement that they said, because I think that there has been other stadiums that I've seen and witnessed around the country that have been, I would say louder, but I think definitely for me, the more key term is more intimidating.
Yeah. I don't think somebody comes to Kyle Field and is like worried a little bit about their health.
Right.
You know, there are some places where
it's kind of friendly confines a little bit.
Yeah. There are some places where fans go and they're kind of like, or at least fans or players, and they're like, are we going to get out of here? I would think LSU, Death Valley at night is definitely one of those
places.
The
one that I bring up, and I know A&M fans are going to just get all over me, because they usually do, but if you want to talk about places where you're actually intimidated and you're somewhat at least keeping your head on the swivel for, you know, flying objects or acts of physical harm, that's out there in Lubbock.
Oh yeah.
They're nuts out there in Lubbock. And if you want to talk about what, you know, a real home field advantage is, which in my mind is more of something that has to do with intimidation and slight fear for bodily harm, Lubbock has a good home field advantage.
But do the Aggies, do you actually want to be that way? Do you want to?
That's the rub.
Yeah.
That's the rub, because I think there is a certain aspect to Aggiedom that is friendly and is
and most fans. And, I mean, most fans who come here, you know, they're not going to be accosted by folks at tailgates and things like that. Folks aren't going to yell expletives at them.
You certainly can't have it both ways. But I think when you look at the coaches and the players and the fans and the media that make lists of the most, the best, and I think. The best way I can encapsulate it is to say the best home field advantage.
Yeah.
Because that includes loudness, that includes noise, that includes intimidation, that includes the best home field advantage stadiums. I think that there is a certain level of nastiness that is involved that I think that probably to their merit, A&M fans, the 12th man tries to steer away from.
Yeah. And I'll completely agree. The loudness, though. UCLA and Tennessee, but other than that, you know, if this was a coach from, I don't know, South Carolina or Ole Miss or something like that, I completely agree. If you were here last year, of course they played at South Carolina last season, but the year before that, I mean, there just hasn't been. If you're LSU, I know that there were some LSU fans that were commenting on Twitter. Yeah, things have been quiet. One, being on Thanksgiving night, I think that because it's no longer Texas, that has driven people away, and then you're not going to get as many people there because folks just aren't as fired up to play LSU as they were Texas.
I mean, I'm going to butt in with the fact that, and this is something I was going to ask from the very get-go, when you were talking about all the games that you referenced when you said that was the loudest I ever heard, that was all in the Big 12. I mean, you can talk about, and this goes back to a lot of the comments that people have been talking about, you know, bringing the Texas game back and stuff like that. Yeah, it's fine and dandy, and you can puff your chest out that you're in the SEC and you're playing ball with the big boys and this and that and whatever, but you don't have a rival in the SEC.
LSU
is not a rival. It is the closest team here, and A&M hasn't beaten them, and there's some storyline to that, but there is no rivals in the SEC, and I think that A&M fans, especially the casual A&M fans, while they probably do enjoy puffing their chest out about the fact that they're in the SEC, especially with how feeble the Big 12 has been looking lately, but other than that, there's not vitriol towards any of the other teams in the SEC, other than maybe Alabama, but that's so very one-sided.
Well, you know, LSU and A&M played quite a bit there in the 90s. I understand geographically they're the closest, and you want to talk about a rivalry, but it's
but
hard
it's
to have a rivalry.
Not a rivalry for LSU.
No, I don't think so. Not now.
No.
Not whenever they win every game.
No.
But if you're looking at...
But I don't think, I mean, if you go to Baton Rouge and go to a frat party at LSU or go to an alumni tailgate or something like that and say, want to talk about, and have them talk about A&M, they'll probably be like, oh, yeah, it's another team in
the SEC.
Well,
why would they be upset about A&M? A&M hadn't beat them.
True.
You're only going to hate a team if they beat you. Why would you hate a team that loses to you every year?
But yeah, their story, I guess there's what happens on the field and the wins and the losses and stuff like that when it comes to rivalry. There's also a narrative that goes beyond just the wins and losses on the field. When you really talk about a rivalry, you talk about just a history, and there is no history there.
Well,
there's history between and you go back to the fact that A&M is a Texas school, and no matter what conference any of the schools are in, there will always be, with how many D1 programs there are in Texas, there will always be that talk of who is the best team in Texas.
No, and I completely, look, regionally, I completely agree in that, you know, you've got all these teams in Texas. A&M had been in the Big 12 for so long. They had developed these rivalries over years and years with schools like UT and Baylor and Texas Tech. I mean, you're talking about schools they had played for almost 100 years. that's not going to go away overnight. You can't suddenly just leave that and pick up a brand new one with as much history, as much good old-fashioned hate with a team that you haven't played that much. Now, I will say that A&M, I'm not going to say that A&M and LSU have absolutely no history, because they do have some, but it's obviously not going to be to the same degree as A&M has with Texas. But I think if you're talking about does LSU feel it's a rivalry, LSU's not going to feel it's a rivalry until A&M beats them. That's the only way you can develop a good rivalry, is between some give and take. And right now, because LSU on the football field owns that rivalry, they're not going to care.
But here's my question. Even if A&M strings off a couple of years of winning against LSU, are LSU fans really going to still care at all?
I don't know. I don't know the mind of an LSU fan. You just have to ask them.
Is A&M ever, I mean, how many years is it going to take to being in the SEC until A&M doesn't look like they're still sitting at the kids' table? That they're this newbie, that they're the new kid in school that's sitting by themselves at lunch?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're the newbie sitting by themselves at lunch. I think they pretty much established themselves in that first year by going 11-2 and beating Alabama at home. I'm not saying that that carries over for every single season, but I don't think that teams in the SEC are looking at A&M and just kind of patting them on the head and saying, oh, you know, you poor little loser. They're beating teams. They don't beat Alabama and LSU every year.
I'm not talking. Again, I think that there is more to rivalries and more to passion and more to a conference than just wins or losses or what happens on the field. I think A&M has done well since they've been in the SEC.
So what things are you talking about then?
Are perceived by the other programs in the conference as if they are actually a part of the, if they belong, if they're past the pledge stage.
Well, what makes you think that A&M is still pledging?
What things
have you gotten from other fans?
I'm bringing up the arc because I think that it's still new. Sometimes it still doesn't necessarily feel or you don't necessarily think that, remember that A&M's in the SEC. And I think that also the only thing that I take from A&M fans, if you look at stories and blog posts and tweets and stuff, more A&M fans get riled up and interact with stuff that have to do with the Big 12 and other Texas schools than they do other SEC schools.
Well, and again, because those are rivalries that have been established over 100 years, they have the kind of history and they're right down the road. There are a lot of great things about the SEC. A&M is making money hand over fist. There's a lot of things that have been well, and I think ultimately it was a good decision. It was the best decision
for
A&M.
I think it was a good decision.
But what you miss out of that are those long-time rivalries. Obviously, Texas is at the top, but you have some other ones as well. And we talked about this, I guess, last week or the week before. You know, people can act like they don't care what Texas does, all they want to. But you say that, and out of the other side of your mouth, you're talking mad trash about how they recruit, whatever happens on their field or whatever happens, wins, losses, things like that. You still care. You can lie to yourself and say you don't, but you still do. Whether it's out of complete hate and you say, oh, it's like a jilted ex. Say, I don't care what she does. Screw her, da-da-da-da-da. But if she's over here hanging out with, you know, Joe Schmo, and then suddenly you're like, oh, I'm kind of jealous about that. Or if she, you know, I don't know exactly how to, she cuts all her hair off and you're laughing kind of angrily at her, or kind of an evil laugh because she did something stupid. So yeah, it's exactly how it is. And you're going to have to wait another 100 years for A&M to be able to establish themselves with LSU the same way they did with Texas.
Sure. I guess what I'm basing my reference on, and you asked for me to kind of quantify this. When we go to SEC Media Days, there's all those fans down there that are looking for autographs, and they're Alabama fans, and they're
mostly
Ole Miss
Bama
fans, and there's Auburn fans, and there's, you know, there's fans, there's usually there's mostly Alabama fans, but there's a decent cross section of other fans. And you go and talk to them and you ask them kind of like, some fans about any other team in the SEC, and usually it's, oh, I hate them, they beat us 4 years ago, and I can't wait to get revenge, blah, blah, blah. You talk about A&M, oh, it's just so nice that they're in the conference with us.
But again, that's probably coming from teams and fans of teams that have not lost to A&M.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying. If you beat LSU, then I can guarantee that the Tigers will be mad about A&M, and they won't just look at them and say, oh, well, I feel indifferent because we beat their butt every year. That's not going to be their feeling if A&M beats them. The same thing with Alabama. Didn't Alabama put the score or whatever of A&M up in their weight room or something? Or some kind of comment that was made by John Sharp was, I don't know, something about that. And they use that as fuel for the next year. You develop rivalries by give and take. One team wins, one team loses, and then it swaps the very next season or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not that case with, say, LSU right now. I would argue that A&M has a better, at least on the football field, has a better rivalry with Arkansas right now.
Sure.
Because Arkansas hates A&M because A&M's beat them every year.
Sure.
And they also have a lot of history from both being in the Southwest Conference.
Sure, I'd agree with that.
And you've got a lot of crossover with fans. You got a lot of Arkansas fans in Texas, and you probably have some
and
A&M
would,
fans
and
in
frankly,
Arkansas, probably not many.
Probably but. Feel more like a rivalry game if it was not played at neutral site.
Yeah, exactly.
And you had to go into Fayetteville, or they had to come into College Station and see how those fan bases reacted. You're right. That I would say actually probably Arkansas is maybe closer to that. But we went on that long kind of rabbit hole to basically get to this question. Does the departure from the Big 12 correlate with what you seem to say and what it seems like to me that there just isn't as much noise, and you might could say isn't as much enthusiasm maybe or vitriol whatever you might place towards decibel levels? Does that correlate with the departure from the Big 12? Because you like
a little bit. Yeah. I would have to admit, yeah, I think a little bit of that has gone into it, because let's just say as an Aggie, you sit down and you think of all the people that you know that are Auburn fans, or all the people that you know who are Alabama fans. It's probably not going to be that many. I'm sure there'll be some. But when you sit down and you think about all the people you know from Baylor, or all the people you know from Texas, or all the people you know from Tech, it's going to be a lot bigger number. And a lot of times the people that you want to beat the worst are those, I mean, you see those kind of people every day,
mm-hmm.
whereas you're not going to come across an Auburn fan a lot, mm-hmm. at least around in Texas. You're not going to find somebody who's over there talking mad trash and saying Auburn's going to beat your butt next week, but you will find plenty of Texas and Tech and Baylor fans who will.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that comes into a big part of it, that there is just more of a, I'm not saying that Aggies don't want to win, but what I'm saying is there's a little something extra when it comes against a team that you have bad blood with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I miss. You know, again, I was in college when we were in the Big 12. You know, you play in Baylor, you drive right down the road. It's an away game, but it's an hour and a half away, and you have as many Aggies there as you do Baylor fans or Texas, you know, and that's, to me, really do miss those rivalries. And as I talked about last week, I would much rather see A&M play Texas in a game that maybe conference-wise doesn't mean anything, but at least play Texas over freaking Nichols State and putting me to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather them play a game that actually, you know, you've got bad blood between both sides and it might end up being a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Versus seeing a glorified practice.
I agree, and I think you made a great point that with the that's the other aspect to a rivalry is the water cooler talk, because that's when you more or less have those conversations and get fired up the most about if your team won or lost was if your buddy is gonna talk trash to you or not. So
yeah.
And then you just don't necessarily get that as much with a lot of the teams, and you A&M might never get that with a lot of the teams that they're playing in the SEC, because I mean, it's geographically, it's hugely spread, it's great,
it's spread out,
yeah. And everything like that. But anyway, we'll have to see what the volume levels are like this year as A&M storms into another football.
Of course,
season.
The team has to get something to.
There's that
to cheer about too. Generally, that's on the defensive side of the ball, which has not been up to par.
There's
the past
that
few
too.
Years.
There's that too. Well, That's all the time we have this week. We are going to hit that football fall camp circuit hard as it kicks off here at the end of the week, and we'll be back with some new storylines, we hope. Some new things to talk about other than the same four or five things that we've had to talk about through since the Texas Bowl, and have some audio and everything like that from Kevin Sumlin and some of those people. For next week, we'll probably get into a little volleyball, too, and get just full underway. And, you know, Zach, I was looking this up earlier. That'll be our one-year episode next week.
Oh,
it's our one-year anniversary.
Sweet.
One-year anniversary episode next
week. I hope you get me something nice.
Oh, I will.
Because I'm definitely not going to get you anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, anyway, that is all the time we have this Miami Nation podcast. Go out there. Follow us on MiamiNation.com. WTAW.com.
Chase your dreams, Eagle, kids.
Do all that fun stuff.
And the Twitters.
And the Twitters. And we'll talk about it all next week here on the Miami Nation Podcast.
It seems like every day everything just has a way to burst out the seams. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be. All that we can be.